The closer you look,
the less you see.
That may be true of magic tricks, but not movies. In fact, the closer we look at those cinematic diversions, the better off we are. I'm Bob Smithhauser, and on this official Plugged In podcast, we'll take a spoiler-free look into the world of illusion as depicted in the heist flick, Now You See Me. Here to help us out is my faithful assistant, senior associate editor, Adam Holtz.
You're not going to saw me in half, are you?
Not as far as you know. Actually, it's good that you're here today because one of our listeners has a music question, and I was kind of hoping that you'd answer it for us later on. Is that right?
Absolutely.
All right. Also on today's show, we're going to examine what's become a huge parenting challenge. You see, for moms and dads in traditional two-parent homes, setting boundaries for entertainment and following through is already tough. But what about families impacted by divorce and remarriage? Two homes, multiple guardians, and odds are, different rules for the kids. Well, author and family therapist Ron Deal stopped by with helpful advice and encouragement for those difficult situations. He also talked about Hollywood's portrayal of step-parents. Very interesting insight. And it's all being brought to you by G-Movies on Dish. If you want a large collection of faith-based, family-friendly movies and independent films in one inspiring place, look no further than G-Movies. For more information, call 1-800-333-DISH.
Whatever this grand trick is, it was designed a long time ago. And I believe that what's about to follow is really going to amaze.
That's Morgan Freeman, an actor so prolific that he makes news when he's not in a movie. Already this year, he's appeared in Oblivion and Olympus Has Fallen. His latest is Now You See Me, a PG-13 blend of heists and hocus pocus. It did quite well last weekend. Adam, what can you tell us about it?
Well, Bob, you've kind of alluded to it. Now You See Me is a caper film, and it's based on a series of heists, and four master magicians in New York City have been recruited kind of mysteriously to participate in this, and they stage these public events in which they manage to steal a bunch of money at the same time and kind of give it away, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. And so as the movie progresses and the heists get bigger and bigger, obviously they create some enemies, and so there are some people pursuing them. There's an FBI agent. There's Morgan Freeman's character, who is a kind of a magic buster, if you will. He's out to debunk these illusions that magicians perpetrate upon their audiences, and so the stakes keep getting bigger and bigger as the heists get bigger and bigger, and everybody wants to sort of figure out what's going on at the heart of this mystery, and the movie builds to that point.
And they're being bankrolled by Michael Caine.
That's right.
And we find out there's a relationship there later on that is, again, one of these reveals that we don't want to give too much away, but
right. You
kind of have to set that up. Well, after the first robbery, as you mentioned, that determined FBI agent interrogates one of the smart-alecky magicians, played here by Jesse Eisenberg.
I can maintain my resolve much longer than you can maintain that phony arrogance. And the instant that you even show the slightest crack in that smug facade, I'll be there. I'll be all over you like...
Like white on rice? Sorry, that's unfair. Let me warn you. I want you to follow. Because no matter what you think you might know, we will always be one step, three steps, seven steps ahead of you. And just when you think you're catching up, that's when we'll be right behind you. And at no time will you be anywhere other than exactly where I want you to be. So come close. Get all over me, because the closer you think you are, the less you'll actually see.
In some ways, Eisenberg's character here is kind of obnoxious, but on another he's really obnoxious. On another level, he's kind of onto something. I mean, it sort of is that reality that when you've got a problem or when you've got something that's not going right, if you get anxious and fixate too closely on it, you may be unable to solve it. So I think that, you know, you can sort of unpack what he says here and come out with a takeaway in terms of stepping back, the importance of getting perspective, of not being deceived by the details. But obviously these magicians they're in the business of deceiving you. So they don't want you to step back and get perspective. They want you to stay fixated on the sleight of hand so that, you know, the illusion seems real.
And yet if we don't zoom in on specifics, it's easy to walk away applauding the wow factor of this movie and fail to notice some moral misdirection.
Yeah, you know, one of the core parts of the story is the fact that after each of these heists, which involve millions and millions of dollars, they actually give the money away. And we learn more about that as the movie progresses. But the movie wants us to see these magicians kind of as Robin Hood figures, you know, that we're supposed to applaud them as edgy heroes who are taking these chances and working these illusions in a way that is beneficial to people. And yet, as you look more at it, as the story progresses, there are some really problematic things, and I don't want to give away too much other than to say there's a vigilante aspect here that I think is troubling. So we're supposed to applaud, you know, justice, but there's an injustice being worked at the same time, and obviously that's not the only problem with this film.
Well, and the four people that we meet very early on, what little we know about, like, they're called the Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
It's not terribly noble, and you know, at first it bugged me that there wasn't more character development on these
right.
guys, and then the more I got to know them, I thought, you know, maybe that's not a bad thing.
We don't want their characters developed too much here. And you know, that alludes to some of the other problems with the film. You know, there's some sexual content. One of the magicians in particular seems to have a penchant for taking advantage of people, and,
right.
and a couple of the other ones, you know, basically use their skills to pad their pockets in illegal and immoral ways.
And well, Hollywood has not done magicians any favors this year. You think about it, between these guys and the characters in the incredible Burt Wonderstone. Now, I'm sure there are some very nice, honorable people in this business. We just haven't met any on the big screen lately.
No, we really haven't seen that. And again, we're supposed to sort of applaud these characters as mavericks and not look too closely at their moral core. And I think, you know, related to that is just the film's focus on magic. And obviously magic is a big subject from a Christian perspective. Most of the magic that we see here is mechanical magic. It's sleight of hand. It's illusion stuff. But there are some spiritual things that I think, in addition to that other content, are worth noting here. We get some passing references to voodoo, tarot cards play a role. There's some Egyptian mythology that works in at the margins. And I think the other, you know, supposedly feel-good message that we're supposed to take away is by the end, there's this emphasis on the importance of having faith. But we never really know what we're supposed to have faith in. And so
right.
when you look at it, it kind of vanishes like a magic trick.
Exactly. It kind of unfolds that way. Lots of illusions and sleight of hand. But did it work for you as entertainment?
You know, I think it worked for me as entertainment to the point at which I started actually thinking
about it. Yeah.
I mean, it's.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're very much in Ocean's 11 territory. We're supposed to just have fun with the caper aspect of these very, very clever people trying to figure out how to beat the system. And if you don't think too much about the morality of it, you know, there's enough content here to earn a PG-13 rating, but I've certainly seen worse. But I came away and thought, you know, I don't think they want us to look too closely at this film either, because when you do, there's nothing there. It's sort of like the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah, in one sense, like you, I was being played by the film. I didn't mind the fact. I mean, it was sort of you go along with it to a point. But boy, I tell you, you're right about the content. There were these unpleasant surprises. It was kind of like watching a ball game through a knothole in a fence,
yeah.
only to have somebody on the other side keep poking you in the eye,
yeah,
whether
no.
it was profanity or different kind of things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and so there's enough there that it seems like a trifle, and a trifle with enough problems that I'm not sure I would recommend it to anybody.
All right. Thanks, Adam. You know, Julie and I already had to turn down one request to see Now You See Me.
Yeah, don't you get tired of saying no sometimes?
Yeah, and some kids just really wear you down, and I won't mention any names. But but at least in our case, you know, we are a united front. Not all parents have the benefit of that, which is the subject we're going to talk about next. In homes touched by divorce and remarriage, co-parenting in regard to media choices can create a very frustrating dynamic. You may try to be discerning and consistent when it comes to entertainment, but maybe your children spend time with an ex-spouse who isn't as wise or as sensitive. What do you do? Well, recently our own Paul Acey sat down with author and family therapist Ron Deal, who specializes in blended families. So does the other voice you'll hear briefly during this conversation, Tammy Daughtry. She's the founder of Co-Parenting International, and being divorced and remarried herself, is in the process of co-parenting teenagers. Let's hear what they had to say.
Any parent in a two-parent biological first family home knows that communication is difficult, right? I mean, how many times do my kids have asked me about something and I give them an answer? Little did I know that there was already an influence from my wife and information I didn't have. And so I have to backtrack and go, wow, okay, I blew that one. Let's get it. It happens in
yeah.
the best situations, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about between homes, between people who don't like each other sometimes, and I have really have had a difficult history with one another, all of a sudden, it just adds to the complexity of the nature of that. Half the time, I feel like as a dad, I'm trying to catch up with what's going on in my kids' lives. So being proactive and trying to anticipate, hey, you know what? I need to have a conversation with my ex about iPads and uses and internet connections and movies and cell phones and on and on it goes over the course of the child's life. You have to be proactive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, the challenge is, what if one spouse is unwilling to be proactive, unable to be proactive, or just flat malicious and doesn't want to be?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, there's some real challenges.
Some really tricky conversations in there. I mean, how do you work with a situation like that when you have one parent who really wants to deal with this?
Well, you know, one of the things everybody wants to know right now, you just asked that great question, and they want to hear the definitive answer. And Tammy and I are going to tell you there's no definitive
answer.
Not
a one-size-fits-all. Yeah.
There's not a one-size-fits-all. Every circumstance is a little different. Plus, here's the hard truth that we have to start with, and that is you don't have as much power as a divorced parent as you have as a still married parent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just true.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that, but I always feel like I have to have, here's the dose of reality. There's certain things you can't do anything about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, let's talk about what you can do, right? You have influence when they're in your home, for example. And so trying to co-parent with the other home starts with an attitude of respect towards them, generosity towards them. When you can bend, bend. Try to find the common ground as often as you can when you're negotiating. Every once in a while, there's a hill to die on.
Yeah.
And you need to choose that hill well, and you need to die on it. You need to say, nope, I'm not bending on that one, and here's why.
Yeah.
And somewhere in the midst of all of those different scenarios, hopefully there's a positive enough influence that over time you kind of begin to win the other household towards the middle ground of what is actually good for the children.
Sure.
Well, and sometimes, especially when they're teenagers and they're making more choices, they have more freedoms that you may not even realize. I think it's important to talk about, you know, as your mother or as your father, you know, I feel this decision is important because, and really unpack that with the kids, because you will never be able to control what happens at the other house. You may or may not have a say. That co-parent may or may not want to work with you, but your influence as a godly parent committed to values that you believe in. I mean, every parent, no matter their family dynamic, is going to have to stand up and say things to kids with love and with purpose that kids are not going to want to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know any 12-year-old kid that didn't want Facebook.
Yeah.
You know? And that's one thing, a real simple example that we really tried. You know, Angelia wanted to have a Facebook since she was 9 years old. Thankfully, her dad and her stepmom, as well as her stepfather, my husband, we all agreed, you know, Facebook is when you get to turn 13. That's where we go with that. So sometimes she's like, oh, four parents, really? You know, and but mom, everybody has Facebook. I said, well, you know what? The four parents that love you and are committed to die for you, we'd do anything to protect you. We agree. You know, and so we're not always going to agree. I know that we won't, but thankfully we found a few things that we could agree on.
Again, that's the easy ones. Right? The more difficult ones are when there's not agreement on how to do things.
Sure.
Well, one of the things back to something that Tammy started talking about is inoculating. And as you said, we're all inoculating our kids against something in the world and the world's influence. Inoculating, medically speaking, is a controlled injection of something that's harmful for you. I think when we do that with our kids in really difficult co-parenting situations where one home's trying to teach Christian values and morals and hopefully not the kids help them to not make decisions of watching R-rated movies at the other home,
right.
Mm-hmm. You have to inoculate against the freedoms that they have over there. Mm-hmm. The hard part, the delicate part, I should say, is not belittling the other parent, speaking ill of the other biological parent, and not making it a personal attack, but talking about, here are my values, here's what I believe, here's why, here's what I think God has in store for us, here's the beauty he's trying to create for your life, trying to keep our minds free, you know, guard your heart, those kinds of messages.
Sure.
And then you're praying that this child has enough ego strength to carry that over to the other home.
Yeah.
And when dad or mom turn on the R-rated movie, gets up and walks out of the room. Now, I'll just shoot straight with you. There's not many 12-year-olds that can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a few 16-year-olds. There's some 18. I also know some 28-year-olds who cannot do that.
Sure, sure.
So there is a component here that is up to the child, And that's true whether it's the world or the other home.
Yeah. And I would imagine just even having that conversation in some ways at least confirms for the child what your values, what yeah. your morals are. And I yeah. think that that's got to sort of sneak into the back of their mind. Even if they make the poor decision in the short term, perhaps it can work on them in the long term.
And here's one of the little scripts I'm going to add into this conversation, because I think it's important to label for kids their own experience. I think you say to the child, look, this is what I believe. This is what we're trying to protect you against. Here's what we think God wants for us. And oh, by the way, I realize this puts you in the middle between your dad and I, between your mom and I. I realize this is a stuck place for you. I've mm-hmm. found that language really, really helps kids understand that tug of war in their heart.
Yeah.
And it puts words on it so that the parent is compassionate with this and empathic. And sometimes kids will say, yeah, man, that is so true. I hate that feeling. Most kids won't say that, because that too feels like a betrayal of the other home. It's a difficult thing for kids.
Yeah. Right.
But you still put words on it as the parent. It helps to retain your influence.
I was watching the other day with my daughter, actually, Cinderella, and one of the things that I noticed
I know where this is going.
was the evil stepmother. And yep. as you know, Disney is full of evil stepmothers.
Yeah.
Obviously, with divorce and blended mm. families and co-parenting issues, all that kind of stuff has become much more prevalent in the last mm-hmm. 10, 20 years. Mm-hmm. I would imagine the media has gotten a bit better about their portrayal of those situations.
Don't think so.
Not really, huh?
I don't think so. I got a number of thoughts here. First of all, the media is still very brutal, I think, towards step-parents, towards ex-spouses. You know, look at the way people talk about their ex, and derogatory and negative, and all the jokes that are told in sitcoms. And kids are hearing that.
Yeah.
And they're hearing, and they're watching their mom watch that show, and they're looking for your reaction about how you respond to that. Mm-hmm. And the, That's by good. The way, stepmother, wicked stepmother, and the abusive stepfather are still very alive and well negative stereotypes. And we have the Brothers Grimm to blame for that. Most people know this, don't know this little known fact. The original stories that were written about Cinderella and Snow White did not include stepmothers. They were mothers.
Interesting.
And society would not embrace the story.
Mm.
Nobody bought the books, so to speak.
Mm.
So the Brothers Grimm came along, changed it to a stepmother.
Hmm.
And the rest is history. Everybody can embrace, oh, a mother would never do that to a child, but a stepmother would.
Yeah.
And that's still the negative stereotype that we have. And so when you're watching a movie or a TV show and they're talking about the deadbeat dad, ex-spouse, ex-husband, you speak to that. You mm-hmm. use that as a catalyst to a conversation about, that's not how we treat. That's not how I think about your father. That's not how I think about your mother.
Right.
Communicate messages, just like she's saying, that's like a Hallmark card to the stepmom on yeah. Mother's Day to say thank you, to be countercultural. Mm-hmm. Use the media opportunities that you have in your family to convey some positive messages.
That's a really great point. I mean, and again, we're talking about inoculation in a way. We know
yes.
how influential the media can be, and yet parents are always more influential.
You know, and here's the biblical principle here, okay? Grace connects.
Mm.
Possessiveness divides.
Right.
When you start saying, don't you call her mom, I'm your mom. Don't you go over there and enjoy those people. When you're derogatory and negative, what, your dad did what again? Oh, he can't keep a job. All of those negative things are possessive in right. their intent, and they're dividing.
Mm-hmm.
They divide mm-hmm. a child's soul
yes.
because they are torn between their bio mom and dad. They love everybody. They just want you to get along.
Right.
It tears families apart. It ruins that co-parenting ability. But grace is attractive.
Yeah.
It connects. It invites.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're talking about parental influence, think about how grace, a graceful thought about the other home, a comment about the other home,
yeah.
increases your influence as a parent. So when it yeah, comes
absolutely.
Time to, for there's a hill to die on, and you have to talk turkey to your kids about something, they're more inclined to hear your values
sure.
and respond appropriately than if you're negative all the time.
No easy answers, but there's a lot of wisdom there.
Hmm.
And Adam, I can't help but think that for folks struggling in a scenario like that, it's comforting to know they're not alone, that somebody understands.
Yeah, and to be reminded that our kids are watching how we handle ourselves in what can seem like a no-win situation.
Right, right. It's keeping that big picture in mind. You know, losing a media battle here and there, but winning the war for their hearts.
Hmm.
Good stuff. Hey, remember that music question I mentioned we had?
Is it time?
It's time.
Stand by. Mail loading.
Today's email is from Jessica Book of Bainbridge, Pennsylvania. She starts off by saying that she's 18 and loves to listen to the podcast on her iPod. She's a big fan of our annual Oscar Roundtable and loves it when we do trivia. Well, thank you, Jessica. Here's her question. I was wondering what you thought of the single by American Idol Season 12 winner Candace Glover. With all the hype around her winning, I imagine many music lovers and American Idol fans, including myself, are wondering about her song, I Am Beautiful. Thanks so much for all you do. I can't imagine my life without Plugged In. Well, that's very kind. And a good question. Fortunately, our music expert is seated beside me. Mm-hmm. But before we hear from Adam, let's play a short clip of I Am Beautiful for those who may not be familiar with the song. And he said,
Jessica, Candace Glover was one of eight Christians in the finals this year on American Idol, and I think that her faith is probably reflected in this song. Candace is singing from the perspective of a woman in a relationship with a man who doesn't treat her very well. He seems to belittle her instead of building her up and kind of picks on her, but she's able to take comfort in the fact that she's beautiful, and she sings about somebody else, a he, who thinks that she's beautiful. And I don't think it's too big a leap here to suggest that the he in question here is God. And the fact that she pointed, you know, upward during her performance on American Idol would seem to reinforce that interpretation. So I think this is a really terrific song about a woman in a hard situation who's able to take real comfort in the fact that she knows that God loves her for who she is, even if she's in a relationship with somebody who doesn't.
Well, I guess we can hope that her album, when it comes out, is just as strong, and I'm sure that Adam will be reviewing that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Jessica, because we read your comment on the podcast, we're going to send you a small token of our appreciation, the DVD Blu-ray combo edition of the Oscar-winning musical Les Miserables. That PG-13 drama about grace and redemption stars Hugh Jackman and Anne Hathaway, and we hope that's a blessing to you. Now, for everyone else listening, we could have a gift waiting for you. All you have to do is go to PluggedIn.com, click Contact Us, and email us a question about entertainment, pop culture, or maybe you're curious about how we do what we do. Ask away. And then, if we answer your question in the listener mail segment of this podcast, we'll send you a little thank you for helping us out. Of course, for us to be able to get it to you, the post office is going to need your full name and mailing address, so don't forget to include that in your email, as Jessica did. And be sure to put podcast in the subject line so it doesn't get lost amid all the other mail that comes in. Adam, thanks for the assist.
And Bob, thanks for not sawing me in half.
Hey, now, we still got a couple minutes.
May I be excused?
Thanks also to Paul Acey, Ron Deal, Tammy Daughtry, our engineer Linda Rexford, and our sponsor G-Movies, available on Dish. A brand new Christian album just hit stores Tuesday from the pop rock group Building 429. It's titled We Won't Be Shaken, and the opening track is a great wake-up call to the redeemed to be the heart and hands of Jesus. As we sign off, we're going to be playing a clip from Get Up. Have a terrific week, and if you know a family wrestling with the co-parenting issues our guests talked about today, take a minute to send them a link to our podcast page. That interview may be just what they need to hear right now. Join us again next week when we'll take a close look at the new comedy, The Internship, starring Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. Because the closer you look,
the more you see.
Proving that it's not just entertainment.
The official Plugged In podcast is a production of PluggedIn.com and Focus on the Family.
Redemption came as a way.